So it's that time again, the training hump day hangout, the ISFSI training hump day hangout. Today, this month, today we're going to talk about some more heart health, right? February is our heart health month. The American Heart Association and others kind of pushed that out, right? This is Valentine's Day is in this month. So it's kind of a theme here, right? Heart health and being healthy. So we're going to continue with that theme here in today's Hump Day Hangout. With me today is Brian Zeitz from Kirkwood, Missouri, where they don't have any snow, apparently. You would think being Midwest kind of right, you would have some snow by now, but they don't have any snow. Brian, thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Appreciate the invite.
What did we take you away from?
Just a little lunch with the fire chief, which is always good to get out of that. So
yeah. Not missing anything. You know, we all know that guy. That guy's he could bust your balls all hour long during the lunch hour, huh?
The 24/7 here.
All right. So anyways, we're going to talk about this. One thing we want to talk about too is what you're going to eat for lunch, right? And is it going to be heart healthy? But heart health is a important part of the fire service. We're going to touch a little bit today on how are we training to be heart healthy, and what is your fire department doing for that? So I want to share my screen here so you can see the theme. Again, this is this month is the heart health month. I do the May Day Monday. The first Monday of the month is May Day Monday, and then all month long we're going to emphasize the heart health. What the real idea here behind this is, we spend a lot of time and effort and money on our apparatus. Everybody loves a clean fire truck and a well-maintained fire truck. In fact, you really can't operate right without well-maintained fire trucks. The key here though is that in order for that fire truck to operate really well, it has to have well-maintained people on it. And the biggest apparatus, the biggest thing we need to maintain is that heart, the cardiac apparatus. We can't forget about the cardiac apparatus. And it seems like that is something we do forget. We work on fire tactics training. We work on how to stretch a line. We work on how to throw a ladder. But are we working on how to get our heart healthy? Look at that. Now we have another member there joining us. Another subject matter expert on exactly what we're going to talk about today.
I don't know about all that.
Chief, thank you for coming.
Sure. Well, you know, thanks for all the notice.
Where did we find you? What rock did we get you out of under?
All I had to do was just reschedule my little staff meeting for an hour. So it's all good.
Good. Do you have any snow where you are?
Do we have snow? Do you want some?
So that was something we talked about. The guy that I was talking to the other day, that's a killer, isn't it? With the heart, is shoveling snow.
I think it's any, you know, what we, the way we try to try to teach it is that, you know, whether it's firefighting or snow shoveling or whatever, it's the trigger, right? Like firefighting inherently doesn't kill you, right? Per se, right? But it's the trigger that causes whatever's going on already in your body, whether it be your heart or whatever, it can be the trigger to cause the sudden cardiac death or the heart attack or whatever. So yeah, it's an unusual strenuous load.
So this, we're going to probably jump around here, but because of this, that was great. And it's a great lead in, but that guy who died shoveling snow, like you said, right? The snow shoveling didn't kill him. There was probably something underlying there that he had already had a problem, right? So it could have been a difficult left turn in his car might have stressed him out enough to be the trigger. It could have been putting his groceries into the car, right? That could be the trigger, much like what you're saying.
Tony, the cool thing with I think, you know, Chief Kerrigan agrees, the thing with the snow shoveling, that I think, you know, the equivalent with the fire service is, you know, it's not something we plan, right? So the snow comes, we see it, and usually it's okay, I'm going to go do it now. And, you know, it's not like we prep ourselves into it. stretched mentally. It's okay, I'm going to go do it. And we do it till the job's done. And the fire service is the same. We do the fire until the job's done. We don't take, you know, you don't oftentimes see people take breaks while they shovel snow. It's, I got to get all the snow shoveled. And I think, you know, to that point is, you know, there's a lot of correlation there that, you know, throughout the day, you know, on the fire service world, at least, you know, we can do things to prep ourselves to get ourselves both mentally and physically fit, but also stay that way throughout the day, you know, and we can talk about that as we go, but, you know, how do we do that so that when that call comes in, it's not that quick adrenaline rush and then we go to work and then, you know, our heart rate's so high and then we have that sudden cardiac event.
Yeah. I went to the gym today, right? I went to the gym today and I took a few minutes before I got into the routine, right, to get ready.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it was stretching or kind of getting the muscles a little warm, right? And you could do the same thing if you're going to shovel snow, right? If you know you're going to go out to shovel the snow. So you would prep, you could prep yourself. A lot of guys don't, right? That's what you're saying.
Right. A lot of guys don't. A lot of guys just go from, you know, sitting on a couch and in front of the fireplace to I got a shovel in my hand and I'm going a million miles an hour to get this done because it's cold.
And same thing with the firefighting. Yeah, exactly. Right. And if we had a warning, hey, there's a fire coming in 30 minutes. You know, I hope that our guys would take some time to stretch out, get ready, get that going. It probably still wouldn't. But again, if we don't have that leeway, we don't have that advanced warning.
So the idea is to prepare your body for what we can't control as much as we do for what the things we can control. We're not going to be able to avoid an adrenaline rush from the bells going off in the station, from hearing house fire, possible entrapment, all of those things that just make our blood pressure skyrocket before we literally set foot on the rig. What we can do is better prepare our bodies to withstand the rigors of strenuous firefighting, which starts right when the bells go off, right? The firefighting starts really when the pager goes off and the bells go off, the moment you're notified of the incident. So that's the idea behind the preventative aspect and the preparatory aspect of fitness and health.
So I got a little ahead of us here, and I wanted to talk quickly just about how serious the problem is, right? And I want to show the screen here and share some stats with us. These numbers were sent to me by Bill Carey, which again, everybody knows Bill. Bill's done a great job of tracking how our guys are dying, right? And from 2020, from again last year, fire service cardiac line of duty deaths. There were 23 deaths. Last year alone, we had 96 line of duty deaths, which again, that was higher than the last couple of years, but there were 35 COVID deaths, which again, it's horrible. It's horrible. And a whole nother aspect of dangers on the job, right, with COVID. So let's take the COVID deaths out and we go down to 61 line of duty deaths. Out of that 61, 23 are cardiac related deaths. So 40%, right? 40%. And that's about average for every year. 40% of our line of duty deaths, sometimes 50, sometimes more, are cardiac related. Go ahead, Dan.
I would just add, and I think Bill would tell you this, if those numbers in the other category, you know, the category of other, are not included in Bill's statistics here, and I know Bill does the best job with this stuff of anybody, I work with him a lot on this stuff, but if those numbers in the other category aren't included in this, then it's very likely that a lot of those other categorized deaths are going to end up in the stress and overexertion category as well. It's just that at the time the report was published, there wasn't definitive information yet. But you know when somebody gets killed at a fire, when a building falls on them, you know that immediately, right? We don't always know that a heart attack or a stroke was the actual cause of death right away. It takes time. So yeah, I mean, you're probably going to end up closer to half than we are now, And the other thing that jumps out at me that we get asked a lot about when we teach is this, the average age of firefighter cardiac death. I mean, I'm 53, you know, so like that should worry anybody that the average age of these deaths is so low in our business compared to that of the general population, right? Which is typically up in the high 60s, right? That's another concern too. So it's a huge problem when half of anything is all in one cause. So even if we lower the overall on-duty death numbers, if half of them are still caused by stress and overexertion, then we have a lot of work to do still.
So what do you think if that number, if there were 23 firefighters killed venting roofs, what would happen to the fire service?
I would imagine, based on past performance, that we would come out with some kind of major new way of doing something to fix that, right? Because it's a sensational topic. It's visually sensational. Fire is sensational. Like, it's glamorous. It's not, this guy had a stroke after he got home from work and he died because he happened to be at a fire 12 hours before. It's not glamorous. It's not sensational. So I think that there's that aspect of it that contributes to the, you know, that's not going to happen to me.
Brian, what would Missouri do? I know that there's a pretty good strength of Missouri State fire service.
Well, I think you'd have to take a hard look at it, you know, and determine if things like that. I think Dan would agree. Those are tactical things that are easily, you know, people want to put a finger on and say, hey, tactically, we'll change this. We'll abandon roof ventilation and we'll call it good and we'll save 23 lives. You know, in the fire service, that's not as easy as that is, because we have to change the culture. We have to change the mindset of people. It's easier for me to say, hey, on a fire from here on out, you're going to use X instead of Y. But if I tell you, hey, every day you got to work out and you have to include cardiovascular fitness in it. You know, I love these statistics. I think, and maybe Dan, you might be able to share this with us because you're very knowledgeable about this stuff, but you know, it's easy for someone to see the number 23 and say, well, that won't ever happen to me. There's a million firefighters, whatever, X, Y, Z. But how many people have had a cardiac event that's been a career ender? You know, that's a statistic that I think would shock some people is, and I know of several just personally that have had that happen to them.
So that's a great point, Keith. And we talk about that a lot. And folks like Dr. Denise Smith and Sarah Janke and that whole research group that we work with, you know, depending on where you draw the statistics from, they can tell you that anywhere upwards of, for every firefighter sudden cardiac death, there's upwards of 25 firefighter cardiac issues that you described like that are career ending, disabling injuries that put somebody off the job and alter the rest of their lives, their quality of life. So, you know, you're over 1,000 firefighters a year, you know, in some cases that are suffering those career ending or disabling heart injuries over and above the actual cardiac deaths that get documented in the USFA statistics. So it's sobering, if you ask me, and it's something.
Not to mention those that weren't reported.
Sure.
Right. Right. Again, I think about the career side. I mean, I know guys who, you know, they don't want to let anybody know that they had an event, right? Because they know that what the impact is going to be on the job,
right?
With their career, right? I mean, yes, I think that's the sobering fact is that for every line of duty death, upwards of 25 people had an event. And again, the fact that we're not stopping, that we're not safety stand down on this. Again, let me share a screen. This is from my last year's May Day Monday. And again, it was try to get some kind of action for people out there. But if you think about this, how many more firefighters have been killed by ventilating roofs and by eating donuts? Again, I know that that's you know, a shock value, if you
right.
know. But we know that we don't do the people responsible for maintenance of our hearts is us, right? And that's it. again, now the fire service could perhaps come up with training, maybe offer physical fitness training, offer scans, offer tracking, wellness stuff. But ultimately, it comes down to our personal responsibility, right? And I just wanted to say that if 59 firefighters were killed venting roofs, we would stay off roofs. We would find a way to do that, right? There would be classes at FDIC. There would be all kinds of things. There'd be T-shirts about I don't go on roofs anymore, yeah. Right? But t-shirts. There isn't. Yeah. And for some reason, we can't seem to stop or really get a good control over the heart health. What, Dan, I know you guys, you and Jim wrote a great book, and you're still, you know, carrying that torch for firefighter physical fitness. What kind of things do you recommend a fire department do training wise to get ready for the firefight?
Well, thank you. First of all, I appreciate that. The first thing that I would stress is that heart health and your overall wellness is more than just about working out in a gym, right? And that's that's what everybody thinks about, right? We think about how should we train to prepare ourselves to perform better, which is a very key component of our work. Is we train for performance, not for looks or anything like that, right? So that's a huge part of it, but it's very comprehensive in that we also need to incorporate good hydration strategies, rest and recovery strategies, and everybody hates it, but you know, sensible nutrition approach as well. And so it's all packaged up into one ball, right? And if we neglect two or three pieces of those, what we call the four pillars, we're not doing ourselves justice, right? But to answer your question, in terms of physical fitness, what we should be doing is we should be training in the gym or in the fire station or wherever we work out to replicate as best we can the things that we do on the fire ground. So that's what the functional part of it is, right? So, you know, hockey players train a certain way to be better at playing hockey. Gymnasts train a certain way to be better at doing gymnastics. Firefighters should be training to be better at what we do. And why is that? It's because it's going to improve our heart health, but it's also going to reduce our risk of injury and things like that because of the things that we do on the fire ground. So it's a combination of what we like call eight different things, right? It's core strength, which is a very basic foundational component that we have to have good core strength, right? We have to have good flexibility and we have to have optimal cardiac health, right? Or cardiovascular health. All right. So they're the three foundational components. The functional strength training components, we simplified just to say, we push, we pull, we lift, we carry, and we drag. That's what we do on the fire ground. So our training, our movements, our exercises ought to replicate that when we're trying to train to get in better shape. So that's kind of just sort of a high level view of it.
And I agree, right? Because everybody thinks that when we talk about physical fitness, that it means that I got to go get a gym membership. And it really doesn't. Uh-huh. I mean, again, and everything, small pieces will make us a lot more healthy, right? Mm-hmm. So if I eat a little bit better, if I cut something out, or if I change what I do, portion control, things like that, if I eat better, and then if I just do something, right, get off the couch a few more minutes each day.
That's step one.
If I take the steps instead of the elevator.
Do something.
Right. Those are some things that don't require a gym membership. Then, of course, we can do firefighting things. You can go and push a weight sled. Right. Because that's kind of like mimic some things that we do. The rope battle rope thing. You can do that because that kind of mimics some of the stuff that we do. Right. You can just do stairs. Right. You can go up and down stairs a couple times a day. So it doesn't necessarily take a big gym membership that I do.
So no, all it takes is your body, really. If you really want to get down to the base level of it, it's if you have a body, you can exercise. You don't need any particular equipment.
And then also raise your heart rate. Right.
Absolutely.
Get that out here. I remember the book on combat. He wrote that about against stress in combat, right? And one of the things he talked about is as our heart rate starts to raise, we lose some of our functions, right? As it gets up, we start to lose that fine motor functions. We can't pick up dimes and things like that, right? And then we focus in on things, right? We lose the peripheral vision. We lose auditory, but we can't necessarily hear things as that heart rate starts to go and we start to stress out. Is there like a region we should be working in? What kind of heart rate, where should we get our heart rate?
Well, so there's two different levels that we tend to look at. There's what we call the high intensity level of a heart rate that you want to sustain. And then there's also the endurance-based heart rate level. And either one of those is easily calculated as a sort of baseline. So you first are going to start by taking 220, I think, minus your age. Okay. And that should give you your theoretical maximum heart rate. And then from there, we like to target around 85% of that maximum theoretical heart rate for high intensity work, and about 70%, as you see on the chart here, for more endurance based stuff on the days you're not really pushing yourself too hard. So, you know, you figure out your own personal theoretical maximum heart rate. You have it, it's good for a year. So there you go. You don't have to do a whole lot of math. You got it for a year. The good news is every year you get older, it goes down. So that's another good thing for us. And then you know what that target is. And there's ways you can sense that in a gym environment or whatever, that but without like a device or anything like that you would need to look at it as well. But those are the two target rates that we want to hit, is 85% and 70%, depending on whether we're doing high intensity training or endurance based training.
So Tony, I was going to say, you there, Tony?
So Tony muted himself.
Oh, typical. So I was going to say, you know, we're from a training aspect of it, something that, you know, I kind of keep in back of my head. I played soccer in high school. And so, you know, if you take it and keep it the most basic, you know, at practices, you practice a bunch of skills. And so, you know, and Chief Kerrigan kind of maybe give us some insight on this, but, you know, you practice these skills. So, you know, for the fire world, maybe it's forcible entry, but at a high level, right? So we do it in full gear, SCBA on, like we would do in a game. And, you know, like we did wind sprints, we did hills. Those are physical things, but in the fire service, we could do like pull hose, but we do it in everything. And then when we had scrimmages, that was to bring all the skill sets together, which is like our live fire evolutions or our live drill sets. But that was to exert us to a level to where we were operating in that endurance level for an extended period of time, similar to that of a fire ground or in our place, a soccer game. You know, a scrimmage wasn't a 10-minute thing. A scrimmage was, hey, we're going to scrimmage for 45 minutes and you're not coming off the field, puke. You know, and that's what we did. And, you know, and that was high school, right? And I was probably in the best shape of my life in high school because,
sure,
you know, soccer is just a very enduring sport. But I think if we take those things and we correlate that to our fire training and incorporate the fitness aspect into our fire training, this is probably the wrong motivation here. So Chief Kerrigan and Tony will probably be like, don't ever do this. But, you know, if you show people in the fire ground, like in these scrimmages or fire evolutions, you're not, just because you're thin, quote, you know, quote thin, or you look healthy, your heart health may not be there to the endurance level to operate for an extended period of time. And then maybe that's the motivation why they don't kill anybody or injure somebody, to show them, you know, hey, you need to get up off your rear and get doing something, like you said, you know, getting up off the couch for 5-10 minutes more a day.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up soccer, Chief, because that's actually a comparison. Tony may or may not have it, but there's a MET value chart, a metabolic equivalent of a task chart, that we sometimes use as a relational tool to demonstrate, you know, all things being equal, we're sitting here right now in our chairs, that equals one. So that's a MET value of one. And everything else that we do has some sort of assigned MET value: shoveling snow, stretching a hose line, search and rescue. All of those things have an assigned MET value that is calculated by scientists. And you can look this stuff up on the internet, and there's numerous studies on all this stuff. So, you know, a MET value of around 12 is what you're really going to be targeting. Like, for example, coming back from a category one injury, according to NFPA 1582, they target a 12 as a MET value to be able to sustain that, to be able to come back to full duty, right? Your soccer example is actually on the higher end of the examples that we give when we teach. So we can assign a MET value of somewhere around 16 to search and rescue operations under like strenuous, you know, fire conditions, which if you've ever done that and actually been involved in it and found somebody, you can imagine how, you know, how that feels. Soccer, I believe soccer players come in at around 18, right? So that's a good correlation to the kind of, not only, you know, immediate strength that you need, but the long haul and the cardiac health, the overall sustainable cardiac output that you need. When we need our hearts to be at their best is typically when they're at their worst, you know, unfortunately. When we're, you know, we're recreating as best we can in the gym a certain level of heart rate, like Tony asked, but we have documented studies from Denise Smith and her group that show that you easily exceed 200 beats a minute sustained in an active firefighting operation if you're engaged in, you know, truck company work or engine company work. And that's really even difficult to recreate in the gym, right? That's really difficult. It's almost superhuman. So think about what's happening to your body, to every single body system when you're engaged in strenuous firefighting operations. And that should be motivation enough. You know how you feel after you're done, right?
No, and that's kind of what, one of the things I wanted to touch on with this was that as that heart rate goes up, right? Mm-hmm. And we lose some ability, our body functions, you know, again, we get to that fight or flight thing at the end, right? At a certain level of what we're used to. This comes from a combat stress performance. You can see we're operating right now, I think, I don't think anybody's too stressed out. Maybe Brian is, because he's gonna have to go eat lunch with Jim, but we're all operating in the white zone right now, right? And then as our heart rate increases, we start to lose those fine motor skills. Then as we get into the red, our complex motor skills deteriorate. So maybe we can't even, you know, you think about the fine motor skills, we should still be able to operate our nozzle, right? Open that bail up. As you start to lose complex motor skills, think about, we're starting to lose those things, those abilities. And then as our heart rate increases even more, we get tunnel vision, loss of depth perception, loss of near vision, auditory exclusion. This is where, again, the book, right, on combat talks about like cops and stuff. And they always reported that I didn't hear anybody yelling my name. Or we might even have that same thing, you know, where we have firefighters who are in Mayday situations and they said, I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear the radio. I didn't hear anybody calling my name. So that's, again, that as that heart rate starts to increase, and then when we get to a certain point, right, that's where we start to lose that. We get that fight or flight, or now we get the freezing we've learned, right? Fight or flight is a good, we can either leave, run away, or sometimes we get the freezing thing. We can't move at all. Submissive behavior. And then of course the voiding of the bowel bladder, right? We get those things. Those are that's really, really high, and you're out of that. So we need to get our training somewhere in there, right? Somewhere in there that we're operating at, so that we can still perform those, even the complex motor skills, whether it's our SCBA, learning how to negotiate an entanglement, right? That's going to get our heart rate up so that we're ready for that when it goes in. If we don't train in maybe not quite the gray area, but definitely in the red, we're not going to be ready for when the stress really hits us. And the stress really hits us, then that may be the event that we talked about earlier that can cause the event, the cardiac event. So think about these things as we leave this show later on today, and you're going to take the rest of February to concentrate on your heart health and what you should be doing. You don't have to do a gym membership, but do something where you're training in the heart rate in that red gray area, like Dan kind of talked about, the 85%, and maybe even push yourself a little bit higher too at some points, so you know what your body's going to do and you know what to expect.
Well, yeah, you need to, you know, Brian brought this up earlier, a good way to relate to this is that there's that actual physical training that you might do in your gym or in your fitness room at your station or whatever. But, you know, it really, when you get into that, you know, when the, you know, what hits the fan moment, which I can say that I was in one of those moments. So I can tell you how that feels. It really is true. It's the culmination of your physical and mental strength combined with your level of skills and the training that you've gone through over your career that gets you out of a situation like that, if you're going to get out of it, right? So you can train in a gym to increase your performance and your physical ability to withstand. You also need to train the skills and put yourself in those difficult situations like the mazes and the survival stuff like that, and bring it all together so that you really know as best you can how that feels, what your body is going to react like, what your brain is going to react like when, you know, God forbid you get in a situation like that, because it's truly the culmination of all that stuff that gets you out of something like that. You have to be prepared mentally and physically and skill wise all across the board. And if any one of those fails, you're going to drastically reduce your chances of getting out of a bad situation. And I cannot overstate that how important that is from personal experience.
No, and that's the importance right now. I think over the last couple of years, we've seen this stress training, adding stress into our basic training so that, right, we're really good at the basics so that we're not then fumbling over those kinds of things when we get into the heart rate. When we get into the heart rates, and that's where we're going to be operating, right? You mentioned earlier about how you're operating sometimes at 200 beats a minute. I mean, that's crazy.
It's superhuman. Yeah.
That's you're going to lose a lot of those things. And if you can't do the basics at 200 beats a minute, it's really going to affect your ability to survive.
Sure.
I think, too, it's a double-edged sword, you know. Like Chief Kerry was saying, you know, these mazes and things, they challenge your heart by putting your heart into a situation where, yeah, you physically are exerting yourself, but there's also the mental aspect. I mean, you know, you scare somebody to the Mets thing, you know, walking through a haunted house, you know, your Met might be 3 or 4 just walking, but we all know your heart rate can go from, you know, 80 to 160 real quick if you get the GB scared out of you. And so the same thing can hold true too. If you put somebody in a challenging mental situation to where they're not comfortable, you know, we all know about the smoke diver classes. We, you know, those situations build not only physical heart endurance, but they also build mental hardness, which, you know, when you look back at your chart where you showed, you know, the 4 levels, you know, we can't escape the fact that we're humans. And at some point, you know, if things get that bad, we're going to find ourselves in that black area. What we can try to do is prolong the amount of time to where we get to that black area. And so, you know, maybe the red expands out a little bit more, maybe the yellow gets a little bit wider and those gray and black areas get a little bit narrower. And so it gives us more time to operate at a more efficient level. You know, we probably can't ever escape it because the point we're not superhuman, but what we can do is narrow those fields and give ourselves the best chance of survival if we do find ourselves in those positions.
Yeah, we're not suggesting that you throw somebody into the worst. You know, we certainly have to build ourselves up to that level of mental acuity and being able to withstand those really dangerous situations, which to Tony's point is why it's so critical that this is everything we're talking about here. You know, we have Heart Health Month, but this is a lifestyle that firefighters should be living. This isn't something you do for a month like a fad diet and then, okay, I'm good till next year now. You know, this is something that, you know, we feel strongly that when you sign up to be a firefighter, you know, when you take that oath, you're accepting a higher level of responsibility than the general population. You just are, period, end of story. You have obligations that come with this and you have to take them seriously because it's not just you that could be hurt. There's a lot of other people that you can affect by either your good performance or your lack of good performance, whichever end of the spectrum that you're on there.
Well, it's funny. I was just doing in my battalion, I was doing a skills challenge with everybody. And this first time I started this and we're going to do it over the whole year. But the first evolution that we're doing is how quickly can you mask up, right? Mm-hmm. The scenario is you're at the door and you're ready to go. The last thing you have to do is put your mask on. And, you know, again, we had a wide range. We had some that were a minute and a half, which again is deplorable. We had a minute and a half, and we had some that were 15 seconds, right? And imagine being, and I try to tell them, I'm like, look, there's a couple reasons why we got to get good at this. One of them is because imagine being that civilian who's laying on the floor upstairs in the smoky room, who called 911 and said, man, this fire department is so good. They're going to get me out. I trust that they're going to get me out. You get there and it takes you a minute to get your face piece on. The same thing could be said. Let's say she's upstairs laying on the floor waiting for you. You get there and you can't make it to the door without taking a break because you haven't got yourself fire fit, right? You haven't got yourself ready for that. So again, that's the thing, right? I try to tell my guys that, look, we work a great schedule. We work one day on, 3 days off. Those 3 days are really designed for you to get ready for that one day. It's tough, right? Because everybody wants to have a life and they want to go do all kinds of things. But ultimately, our salary and stuff, and even volunteers, it's more about the community thing, the community aspect, right? You should be able to tell your neighbor, yeah, I'm a volunteer and I'm going to do everything I can to help you get out of the house if it's on fire. But we have some kind of responsibility there that we've taken on. You should be ready so that when you come to work, now that's where it plays in. One guy, somebody asked a question on the chat here about hydration. Where does that play in? And is it, I know it's important, but what is it going to kind of do if I'm not well hydrated, or how much do I need?
Sure. Well, so briefly, the hydration, there's a study that Denise Smith did called The Effect of Dehydration and Heat Stress Among Firefighters. And you can literally type that in a search engine and it'll come up and you can download. And she demonstrates clearly the correlation between a lack of hydration coupled with the gear that we wear, the restrictive gear that we wear, and the increase in core body temperature and whatnot, and how detrimental that effect is on our heart and our circulatory system and all that. So starting out the day, coming in for shift dehydrated already, you're already behind, right? It's similar to, in comparison to, let's say you're pre-hypertensive. As a firefighter, being pre-hypertensive is way, way more dangerous than the general population, the accountant being pre-hypertensive. You're already starting out. Remember what we talked about, what happens to your heart when we go to work? We're already starting out behind the eight ball. So same thing with dehydration. You know, we can sweat out a liter or more an hour easily, you know, in strenuous work. And hydration is not something that you can catch up with after you're dehydrated. Like, you can't drink a couple bottles of water and say, okay, I'm good, right? So the best way to approach that is to proactively hydrate, be having that water with you all the time, getting up in the morning, drinking a glass of water first thing before you even touch a cup of coffee, you know, reducing intake of diuretics, you know, coffee, sodas, that and the like, and just drinking water regularly throughout the day, because it just adds more stress to your heart that's already experiencing more stress, right? So there's a direct correlation between those two, and it can't be overstated. It's science.
So Brian, another comment on the chat, the guy said that he just went through a class with you, or a session, a 21-day session.
So yeah, we did a citywide challenge, and so it was called 30 Days to a New You. And basically what it was the idea that it takes 30 days to create a new habit. And so it was just something simple, and we just put it out there that, you know, hey, just do something, whatever it might be, whether it's, parking in a further away parking spot at City Hall and walking that distance. And it was for the entire city, right? So we put it out there, but it was just do anything that's going to improve your health. And, you know, to the point of, we know not everyone's going to get into a gym. We know not everyone's going to do, the different things, but what we can do is we want to improve the health of every member of this city. So, you know, is it on the way in every morning, I stop and get a big cup of coffee and a Big Mac or an egg muffin at McDonald's. We'll stop doing that and change to oatmeal. I always park in the closest parking spot. So now I'm going to park in the furthest one, and I'm going to get myself another 100 steps. I'm going to take the stairs instead of the elevator, something simple, right? But we've noted from a few members, that was the impetus to them starting to really take a hard look at their own life and their lifestyle and change some of their habits that were maybe bad and change them to some healthier habits. And, you know, for the one here is, you know, that gentleman actually lost 21 pounds, just got his highest MET score on his physical last month that he's ever got in his career here.
That's awesome.
And, yeah. And he feels good. Right. So, I mean, that's the big thing, right? He feels better. I work out in the morning before I come to work, and I can tell you, you know, while I dread getting up at 4:45 in the morning, I can tell you it's, yeah, but you know, but after an hour,
but if that works for you, then that's what you do.
It works. It's good. And then the rest of the day I have the energy. It's not something at the end of the day I'm dreading to go do and I'm trying to cut corners to do it. Mm-hmm. It works. Right. So you got to find things that are going to work for you in whatever your system is. So that was just something we did internally here.
You have to set small, achievable, attainable goals of improvement, right? For any of this kind of stuff to work. If you're here and you want to get to here, you don't just go like this. You go here, 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 you know, and Brian just gave a bunch of great examples of how individually somebody can do that and celebrate that sort of success or see improvement and feel improvement and be like, man, well, now I'm going to do this. And then after that, I'm going to do this. You know, it could be one less soda a day, one more glass of water. That could be the start to you eventually not drinking soda at all, right? Instead of doing like me when I went cold turkey, right?
Isn't that one of the problems? That's one of the problems, right? Is that we don't see the results. Like I want to lose 10 pounds now.
No, if you set yourself up for failure, you're going to fail.
Right, right. that's the deal. We set these unattainable goals, and then when we don't get them, we get pissed off, and then we don't do anything. Or we go back to our old routine, which was, right, to sit on the couch for whatever. So, and it's the same thing with firefighting skills, right? The same thing with that. Just like I was saying with the SCBA challenge to put your face piece on fast. Today, it might be 30 seconds. Next time you come to work, it could be 29, right? And again, it's just those incremental changes for the long duration. It's a marathon, right? Not a sprint.
We can give you from the perspective of the four pillars that are in our book, you know, we try when we teach, no matter where we're teaching or talking to people or whatever, we try to get them to leave with personally with one little idea for improvement that they can immediately institute. And if you really want to be competitive about it, one in each of the four pillars. So you have the physical fitness pillar. What's one thing that you can start doing today that you haven't done? It could be something as simple as, you know, every hour on the hour, I'm going to stop where I am and do 5 or 10 air squats because I didn't do them before. You know, hydration, like I told you, drink one more bottle or glass of water and one less soda, like something manageable, right? For your sleep, you know, here's something really simple. It doesn't cost you anything. Put your phones and devices away an hour before you go to bed or a half hour before you go to bed instead of stimulating yourself right up until you put your head on the pillow. There's no effort involved in that at all. Do that. For nutrition, cut your sugar intake. Just think of a way to cut your sugar intake, you know, from what you're, you know, maybe it's put one teaspoon of sugar in your coffee instead of three for this week and then go from there. Little attainable goals that you can achieve success and celebrate those and then build on them. That's what we ask people to do. We can't fix it all in one day.
And from a fire service holistic perspective, right? Just like the 16 life safety initiatives that were set years ago, the same kind of thing could be set for you, right? Or for the fire service, we could, if we have 40%, maybe we'll get down to 35% or 30%. We need to see some kind of changes and adoption. We've changed a lot of other things in the fire service, right? We've gone from Nomex gear to PBI and things like that. We should be able to go from 40% of our line of duty deaths as in cardiac to 35 and so on throughout. And we don't have to flip a switch right now, but we need to take this seriously. I know several firefighters who I've lost friends on the job, and the last one was a heart attack, and it was. And knowing what we know about his lifestyle, right, and the pre-existing conditions he had, It's scary, and any these things can happen. But we want to try and just take some kind of steps to get better, to make ourselves better.
I would say this too, and you know, from a leadership standpoint and a company officer standpoint, you know, if you're the company officer for your station and you got firefighters that are walking up and down the hallways or walking the stairs that are getting winded, and you note it, then you're just as culpable for their health, and you need to do something about it. You wouldn't allow a firefighter to get off the truck that doesn't know how to operate a hose line or force a door. Well, then you owe it to that firefighter and his family, her, her family, to maintain their health and get them the one, if they need assistance, get them the assistance they need to get going. But then two, to be their champion for them to get healthier, to just, you know, turn a blind eye to it is not leadership. And that's a failure on a part of a company officer at a station level. If you're noting those things.
Well, there's two things that come to mind. Number one, I 1,000% agree with you. The company officer is the most pivotal person in this whole, and you know, and some people might say, well, you know, the fire chief needs to champion it first, or it needs to come from the rookie firefighters in the academy first. It's the company officer that should be walking on that floor every shift and thinking to themselves, no matter what else we have to do today, what is something that I can do right now today on this shift to improve the health and wellness of my firefighters on my crew, and start right there. That should be written on the chalkboard or the whiteboard. I'm old, so I remember when we had chalkboards, and that should be in the forefront of their mind. Right. And to your other point, you know, a firefighter by the name of Steve Mass said a long time ago, when we hit the fire ground, your risk factors are my risk factors too. And that's something that should weigh heavy on your shoulders and in your head and in your heart when you go out there and you're trying to convince yourself that you're prepared to do the job, but you might not be. But we can fix it. We can always fix it. Today is the best day to start improving your health and wellness. It's always today.
Yeah, and again, just something small. Brian talked about parking farther away. Yep. Talked about, you know, taking the steps instead of taking the elevator, but that's all what this is about. And unfortunately, like you said, it's a heart health month. It needs to be a heart health lifetime, right? A lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And realize that it's not just about your heart health on the fire ground. It's also about your heart health with your family and everything else that you want to be around for. So again, just do something small. Speaking of that, we're getting close to the top of the hour here, and I know Brian's got some place to be in a shortly. So let's wrap this thing up. I want to go and Brian, if you would give me a couple of things, like two things, and Dan, you're after Brian, two things that you want to leave the watchers, our watchers, with today's podcast.
So I think two things would be, you know, start with one is do something today to make yourself better for tomorrow. That's simple. You know, like, you know, drink water versus soda, all those things, take the steps, but do something today that's going to make yourself better for tomorrow. And then the other one related to training is, you know, the basics are the basics, but the basics aren't easy. And so don't ever be afraid, like Chief Carroll was saying there about the masking drills. You know, don't ever be afraid to go back to the most basic drill that you did in firefighter 1 and 2 or rookie school and do those with a 30-year veteran. You know, it doesn't have to be overly complicated. These are company drills, and they will prepare our people to be better on the fire ground, safer, more efficient, effective for our citizens, which at the end of the day is what we're all working for.
I would say if I had to try to be motivational, I think that the first thing I would say is that it really doesn't matter what rank you are, from the newest rookie firefighter all the way up to the most tenured fire chief. What we have to remember, and especially in our profession, is that whether we like it or not, we all set an example every day, right? We don't have a choice in that matter. We're always being watched by somebody, and that's a good thing, right? Our peers, our subordinates, our bosses, we're always being watched. So the one thing about it is we don't have a choice in setting an example, but we do have the choice in the example that we set. So you need to lead by example, like we try to do with everything in the fire service. You personally can set the right tone, and people around you are going to see that, and they're either going to respond positively to it, or if you're going to be the stick in the mud that sits in the couch and eats potato chips all day, that's an example you're setting as well. You don't have a choice in the matter. You're always setting an example. So set the right one. And the other one would just be to echo what Brian said, you just do something. Like I said before, today is the first day you can start improving your health somehow, some way. It's never a lost cause. We can always do something. No matter how unconditioned we are, we can always start today to go down that road of improvement. So don't be discouraged. Set some kind of a realistic goal. Pick something very simple and go from there. And by all means, reach out if you need help. Just, I mean, my contact information is all over the fire world. I know Brian's is, Tony's is. There's so many people out there that are willing to help you for free and none of that other stuff. It's just, if we can offer some kind of support or assistance, please reach out, you know, email, tweet me, you know, message me, whatever, however you need to get a hold of me. And I'll do anything I can. Jim will do anything he can. There's so many of us in this field that care a lot about what we do in terms of, you know, firefighter health. We're all here to help.
I'm not going to speak doom and gloom, but we looked at the stats earlier in the show here, and there was 23 line of duty deaths last year due to cardiac events. And what we saw, what we've heard, what we've seen in the studies is that there's as little as at least 17 near misses, cardiac events, for each one of the line of duty deaths. That equals 391. 23 times those 17, 391 cardiac line of duty deaths, cardiac close calls. That's a big number. And I think we all probably know someone who has been touched by this. That should be motivation enough for you to do something. Again, I echo what Brian and Dan are saying. And I think that's a theme that we all want to see is it doesn't have to be a big change. It can be something little. Like Dan talked about eating, we could have a show on eating healthy, but that ultimately is going to resort back to heart health and safety on the fire ground. So do something, right? Do something. The other thing too is the small steps. Small steps will lead to big steps, to big gains if you just do something. So I just want to say, I want to touch a little bit about some ISFSI. The International Society of Fire Service Instructors holds this Hump Day Hangout every month, the first Wednesday of the month. Dan and Brian are both active members there. Brian is the second VP. I'm a at-large board member. And we want to remind some people about some events that are coming up. Brian, when's the next happy hour?
Well, this afternoon at 3:00 Eastern, we'll have a happy hour online for our members. It's a great opportunity to interact with some different people, talk everything fire service training. So I would encourage everyone to sign up for that. There's links on isfsi.org or on the Facebook International Society of Fire Service Instructors. Look it up, join in. It's a great opportunity to kind of converse and talk, like I said, everything fire service training.
What about the upcoming instructor weekend or online training event?
So the virtual conference is coming up. Instructor development virtual conference is coming up. That is online as well. Let me get the date ready for that. I should know it. That is March 24th, 2021. It's a 2-day instructional development conference. A couple of big keynoters for that is Chief Billy Goldfeder and Chief Tiffany Boyd Wesley. They'll both be keynoting, and then we have six other instructors teaching 9 different sections, all about instructor development, being the best fire service instructor you can be.
Check out that, because there are some really good classes lined up, events lined up for that that weekend there in March. So thank you all for tuning in to our February. Thanks, Dan, for coming in at the last minute. You too, Brian.
Yep, thanks for having me.
I think we really okay. filled the hour full of good information on how to get heart healthy. This is Heart Health Month, not only for everybody, but definitely for the fire service. Let's get those numbers down and be heart healthy.